Hey, you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC. Tino Gonzalez here, bringing you another episode of Faded Discs, a rebroadcasting of Wendy Connor's UFO radio archive. Tonight's episode features a recording narrated by Frank Edwards. Edwards was an early radio personality who gained popularity after World War II. In 1948, he received a copy of Flying Saucers Are Real, a magazine article written by retired U.S. Marine Corps Major Don Kehoe. If you remember, Don was featured on a previous episode of Faded Discs. Now, after this exchange, Frank Edwards became deeply interested in paranormal subjects and reported on them during his radio show. He would go on to create Stranger Than Science, a radio show that focused heavily on UFOs and other unexplainable phenomena. Now, the recording we're going to hear tonight surveyed the UFO phenomena at the time. This was 1966, and derived from his best-selling book, Flying Saucers, Serious Business. The recording was also produced as a vinyl LP, and, like his books on the subject, was wildly popular. Edwards even made an appearance on the Johnny Carson show at one time. Now, the volume of experiences shared in the recording covers a wide variety of stories, from biblical UFOs to contactee testimonies, fluttering lights in the sky, and blurry photographs. One could say that these sightings set the stage for modern UFO mythology. So, let's hear what Edwards and I think is serious business.
This is Frank Edwards reporting. How real are the flying saucers, officially called unidentified flying objects? On December 24th, 1959, the Inspector General of the Air Force notified all air base commanders that flying saucers are a serious problem. The government of the United States has issued orders advising the military how to recognize the UFOs, how to report them, and how to handle fragments of them. Are the flying saucers really solid objects? The Canadian government says it has borrowed pieces of flying saucers from the U.S. Air Force. The government of Brazil collected several ounces of tin, which dripped from a UFO onto the city of Campinas. The Norwegian government reported in 1952 that it had located and recovered the outer shell of a UFO, which, it said, was certainly not made on this earth. Slowly but surely, the irrefutable facts about UFOs have filtered through the veil of censorship in this and other countries. Slowly but surely, the nature and extent of this remarkable phenomenon has become public knowledge. By patiently piecing together these bits of evidence as they become available, by carefully weighing the guarded statements of scientists and military agencies involved in the study of unidentified flying objects, we shall see that they are indeed serious business. What should we do about them? What can we do about them? Let us consider the case of the Argentine naval transport, the Punta Medanos, which was making its way across the South Atlantic near the Falkland Islands in September of 1963. An enormous craft of unknown type and origin approached the naval transport from astern. The officers of the transport estimated that the object was about 800 feet in diameter. It was gray in color, like dull aluminum, and in shape it resembled two huge soup bowls placed together rim to rim. As the strange craft approached, slowly and silently, and about 100 feet above the sea, the Punta Medanos compass gyrated wildly. The lights went out. The intercommunication system went dead. The radar and radio ceased to function. The ship was virtually helpless. For 20 minutes, this state of affairs continued, and then the strange aerial craft rose ponderously into the heavens and vanished as mysteriously as it had come. This is not an unusual case, let it be noted. The Secretary of the Argentine Navy says this was but one of 13 such cases in which giant UFOs had interfered with the operation of Argentine naval craft in a three-year period. There was no hostility in their actions, but there was unquestionably a powerful electromagnetic field which overwhelmed man-made gear while the UFOs were near. The captain of the Punta Medanos found that he could do nothing while his vessel was within the field of the giant UFO. It was an experience that has been shared by many persons in the air, on the ground, and at sea. The captain of the Punta Medanos was as helpless as, for instance, our own astronaut Major Gordon Cooper. As Major Cooper was making his final orbit of the Earth in May of 1963, he was approaching Perth, Australia at night. Suddenly, Major Cooper radioed down to the tracking station that he was being approached by a greenish glowing disk with a faint red glow on one side. It was traveling east to west, which no man-made satellite does. 200 persons at the tracking station watched the object on the gear there. They saw it approach Cooper. Then it veered away from him and sped on out into space. It was only the first of many such cases. Every American astronaut since Gordon Cooper has also been approached by unidentified flying objects. And each time the UFOs come closer to the astronauts, and each time they remain a little longer. In 1965, Major Edward McDivitt photographed one of these objects near the capsule in which he was orbiting the Earth over the Pacific Ocean. And the photograph, as released by the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, clearly shows a bright egg-shaped thing which leaves a visible trail from its propulsion system. The astronauts have all been approached by UFOs. One of our surveyor shots to the moon was followed by UFOs, according to NASA. These things have caused power blackouts by official admission. Individuals have been burned by radiation when they got too close to UFOs. And mid-air collisions with planes full of passengers, and near collisions as well, can also be found in the reports around the world. These incidents are but a small part of the worldwide story of what we officially call unidentified flying objects. In their early form, they were called flying saucers, which they did resemble in flight. But as the old saucer or disc-shaped types were gradually replaced by more sophisticated models, the term unidentified flying object was officially adopted. It could, and did, include all types of craft and objects. And the objects themselves did, and still do, constitute a major problem for the government of the United States and of many other nations around the world, including Russia, which was first to become aware of their presence. In May of 1946, residents of northwestern Russia, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Denmark were startled by a rash of unconventional objects which darted about in the skies. At first, these things were referred to in the news dispatches as ghost rockets, but it soon became evident that they were certainly not rockets. They changed direction. They were seen to hover. They were silent, and they left no rocket trail. And when the jets were sent up after them, the things simply zipped away at fantastic speed and left the jets far behind. That was in May of 1946. It was just 1 year after man had exploded his first atomic device. Was there any relationship between those two historic events, or was it pure coincidence? Did the flash and the powerful radiation of those atomic explosions attract the attention of something or somebody out there in space? If so, who or what and from where? Scientists and military men were still pondering those questions in the late summer of 1946 when the weird objects vanished as suddenly as they had appeared. In June of 1947, they were back. This time, they were over the northwestern part of the continental United States. First, there was only a handful of them, but their numbers grew rapidly and their activities expanded. A study of their actions led to the conclusion that they were definitely interested in the capabilities of our various vehicles. They paced our planes and our trains and our automobiles and our ships and our submarines. One of them appears to have been involved in a bizarre incident which is a matter of record with the United States Navy. This occurred in the summer of 1947, when the battleship New York was on patrol in the North Pacific. The gear picked up an object which seemed to be following the battleship. Presently, as the skies cleared, the object could be seen with the naked eye and could be examined through binoculars. It was some kind of faintly glowing disc or spherical thing moving in the same direction and at about the same speed as the battleship. The radar had it for several hours, as did the rangefinders for the guns. At length, when the thing could still be seen the next morning, the battleship opened fire, first with the 5-inch guns, later with the big 14-inch rifles. When this cannonade was finished, the object was gone. There was no indication that it had been hit. When the official report was made by the commander of the battleship New York, the refutation was promptly issued that they had only been shooting at the planet Venus. Thus, as far back as 1947, the official policy of issuing explanations which ignored the facts was in evidence. For one thing, the object which followed the battleship New York was in the wrong direction to have been the planet Venus. It did not change position relative to either the ship or the horizon, as a planet would have done. And perhaps most important, and most devastating to the official explanation, neither the radar nor the rangefinders on the battleship could possibly have picked up the planet Venus or any other planet. If this was indeed the first case of deriding those who reported unconventional objects in the sky, it was but the forerunner of many similar cases. And it was also the forerunner of many cases in which human beings have tried to do violence to UFOs, perhaps a common human reaction to something they do not understand. Many centuries ago, when several great shining silvery disks dived out of the sky toward the troops of Alexander the Great as the troops were fording a river, most of the soldiers fled the scene. But some of the hardier men stood their ground and tried to hit the disks with their arrows and with stones from their slings. In April of 1897, when a glowing red dirigible-shaped object indicated that it was about to touch down in a cattle lot on the farm of Alexander Hamilton near Leroy, Kansas, Hamilton and his teenage son and his hired man armed themselves with axes and rushed toward the craft. It quickly rose into the air out of reach, taking with it the hideous creatures which the men reportedly saw in the brightly lighted cabin beneath the craft. Peasants who worked in a beet field in northern Italy reported to the police that when a disc-shaped UFO hovered over them at very low altitude, shortly before dark one evening in 1954, they pelted it with clods and stones, and one man struck it a ringing blow with his shovel. On the night of April 18th, 1962, a glowing red object was sighted by a ground observer group at Oneida, New York. They immediately notified the military at a nearby airbase, and the thing was picked up on radar. It was tracked by radar as it moved westward across the country to a point near Gridley, Kansas. Then it changed course and descended until it was below the range of the radar. A few minutes later, an unidentified flying object landed near an electric power substation at Eureka, Utah. While the object was close to the station could not function. The military went into action promptly and scrambled two flights of armed jet interceptors, one from Phoenix, Arizona, the other from Reno, Nevada. The object remained on the ground near the power substation for 42 minutes, according to military spokesmen. As the jets approached, the object took flight, and the electric power again flowed through that substation. Pursued by armed jets, the object streaked across southwestern Nevada, and it exploded in flight about 70 miles south of Reno over the Mesquite Range. The brilliant flash lighted the city of Reno like a giant photographer's flashbulb, according to the witnesses. The military sources admitted that the object had exploded, but they refused to say whether it was the result of action by the pursuing jets. An interesting case is one which occurred one evening in October of 1954 near Milan, Italy, when a crowd gathered to watch a dimly glowing UFO which had settled down in an abandoned sports field. The witnesses later told authorities that they had stopped a passing garbage truck and had armed themselves with part of its spoiled fruit, which they threw at the craft and its occupants, scoring several hits, they said, before it rose and fled. If this was indeed an extraterrestrial spacecraft with living occupants, it must have been very disconcerting for them to cross millions of miles of space only to be hit on the head with rotten oranges. The dramatic advent of such fascinating objects as those which were first called flying saucers attracted the inevitable attention of those individuals who let their imaginations run away with their veracity. By 1950, some of these characters were beginning to spin their stories of fantastic conversations with alleged space people. Some of them expanded the stories to include alleged rides in the UFOs. Others published books replete with photographs of what they blandly called spacecraft, motherships and all. Because they all claim to have made contact with the operators of the UFOs, the promoters of these various stories are known as contactees. One of the most famous and the most successful was a fellow who had very limited schooling, but unlimited imagination. He concocted an engrossing tale of his alleged conversation with a gorgeous female space traveler from some distant planet. He also concocted some pictures, which the Air Force experts promptly identified as what they called simulated, which indicated charitable restraint on their part, to say the least. This charming fellow voluntarily listed his book with the Library of Congress as a piece of fiction, but he sold the book to the general public as a factual account. I was fascinated by one of his pictures, which he identified as the craft in which he said he had made a trip to another planet. It took me 8 years to track down the object which he called a spaceship. It was the top of a canister-type vacuum cleaner made in 1937. Somehow, I doubt that very much space travel is actually being done in vacuum cleaner lids. Another of these self-styled space travelers is a middle-aged, bald-headed fellow who was tired of his life as the operator of a small, rocky farm. He attracted attention by telling a story of how he had been kidnapped by the occupants of a flying saucer and forced to go with them to a planet hidden behind the sun. Admittedly, a great spot for a hidden planet. He was gone from home about 2 weeks. When he turned up again, he explained to his wife that he had been forced into the saucer and wasn't even permitted to leave her a note. The wife not only accepted his remarkable story, she decided that it was too good to be withheld from the general public, and she began booking her imaginative spouse in schools and clubs and county fairs, anywhere that they could get an audience together for a few dollars. The husband would sometimes change the story a little bit in the course of regaling his audiences, but when he did that, his ever-watchful wife would leap to her feet and remind him how he had told the story in the first place. In 20 years of research in the field of unidentified flying objects, I have been exposed to scores of these contactee stories. I have never yet interviewed or listened to or read about a single case of this kind which was, in my opinion, anything more than good, rich bunk. It is my personal belief that people who tell such stories would benefit from psychiatric treatment. Every student of unidentified flying objects quickly discovers that this present development is but the latest phase of a very old phenomenon. The Bible contains numerous references to strange objects, variously described in terms of contemporary understanding. Ezekiel's wheels of fire were probably his description of what would have been great glowing disks, for wheels in his day were solid circles. The account of Lot in the Bible tells how he saw strange beings who came down from the heavens and who even ate at his table. The Bible contains many references, but those it contains are but a small portion of the reports which scholars have found in various ancient chronicles. One of these is very old indeed. It is the Books of Zion, which are the written version of the legends of the hill people of northern India. For thousands of years, these accounts were handed down from generation to generation by word of mouth, until at last they were preserved in writing in the form in which they exist today. The account to which I refer is that which purports to describe a singular event in the history of those ancient people. The time of the incident was about 6,000 years before the Christian era, yet some of its details have been known to modern science for less than 20 years. The legend tells how strange, glistening metallic vessels were seen in the skies of northern India. After circling the earth, so we are told, these craft landed, and the awestruck natives fell down before the men who got out of the vessels. In a short time, the visitors became the rulers of these people, and they built two cities from which they ruled for many years. The people prospered under their rulership, and all went well until a grievous misunderstanding arose between the two groups of visitors. Then, says the Chronicle, one leader took a group of his companions, and they rose into the sky in one of their huge vessels. They flew to a point from which they could see the city in which their opponents dwelt. Then they released what the Chronicle describes as a great shining lance, which rode on a beam of light. This weapon exploded in or above the doomed city. The flash blinded all who gazed upon it and burned those in and about the city for a great distance. The water of the river was poisoned by the explosion, and the dust of the city was also poisoned, so that none dared enter. When the visitor who had launched this attack realized the enormity of the devastation, he gathered about him the remnants of his own people, put them into the remaining vessels, and rose into the sky, never to return. The devastated city eventually crumbled and vanished. The other city was finally abandoned and fell into ruins. This account sounds very much like an early attempt by space beings to establish a base or a foothold on Earth. It notes that these creatures circled the Earth, and that was at a time when humans were of the belief that the Earth was flat. The description of a great shining lance that rode on a beam of light bears a striking resemblance to a modern rocket with its flaming exhaust, described by those who had never seen such a thing before. And the great flash that burned and blinded and poisoned the dust and the water bears an ominous similarity to a detailed description of a nuclear blast and its aftermath. Yet, all this was said to have taken place many thousands of years ago, and for men of that time to have imagined such things in such detail would be more fantastic than the story itself. The chronicles of ancient India, in this case, merely add mystery to an enigma. If it did not occur as stated, then how did they know about such things in such precise and accurate detail? And if it did happen as described, who were the strange visitors who sailed their metal ships in the skies of Earth almost 8,000 years before man learned to fly? In or about the year 956 A.D., the records of an ancient church in Ireland tell of a weird incident which defies explanation other than some early type UFO. It tells how the people attending church were alarmed by a loud crashing noise. They rushed out to find a metal anchor hooked in the wood above the front door of the church. The anchor was at the end of a cable which ran up to a strange craft, hovering in the air a short distance above the church, and a man-like creature, who was apparently trying to dislodge the anchor, was seized when he endeavored to climb back up the cable. But the bishop, who wrote the report for his superiors, said that he made the parishioners turn the creature loose for fear they might harm him, and that upon being freed, the creature hastily climbed the cable, which was then cut, and the craft sped away in the skies. The anchor, says the old church record, was kept in the church for many years as a souvenir of the incident. In January of 1910, the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, was surprised by the visit of a large dirigible-shaped craft, which cruised about over the city in broad daylight for about half an hour, in full view of thousands of people, many of whom were admittedly frightened by it. In those days, the only similar devices known to man were a few clumsy, underpowered Zeppelins in Europe, totally incapable of visiting this country. Next day, the object was back over Chattanooga, and then it rose into the clouds and moved away toward the south. Another well-attested enigma in the long, long story of the unidentified flying objects. When you hear the statement that no professional astronomer has ever seen a flying saucer, you are entitled to reply, malarkey, for that's exactly what it is. The first UFOs ever photographed were seen and filmed by Professor Bonilla at the observatory at Zacatecas, Mexico, on August the 12th, 1883. He and his colleagues saw hundreds of spindle-shaped craft in formation, passing between their telescope and the sun on that and the succeeding day. More recently, let us consider the case of Dr. Clyde Tombaugh, who is world famous as the discoverer of the planet Pluto. In 1949, Dr. Tombaugh and several other witnesses, including members of his family, watched a strange cigar-shaped craft with regularly spaced rectangular apertures along the sides, similar in appearance to windows. As the craft moved silently about over the desert near Tombaugh's home in New Mexico, the noted astronomer said in a written statement that he had the impression that the object was some form of extraterrestrial device. Dr. Seymour Hess of Lowell Observatory also saw a UFO and had the courage to report what he had seen. It was on May the 20th, 1950. Dr. Hess described a shiny, double-convex disk which he had watched maneuvering about in the clear sky of the southwest. It was completely unlike any other object he had ever seen, with or without the aid of a telescope. One of the most famous astronomers of our time was the late Dr. H. Percy Wilkins, famed among other things for his leadership of the British Selenological Society as a result of his lifelong study of the moon. On June the 11th, 1954, Dr. Wilkins was in this country on a speaking trip, and he was flying in a Convair from Charleston, West Virginia, to Atlanta, Georgia. The weather was good, with scattered clouds and bright sunshine. When Dr. Wilkins arrived at Atlanta, he held a press conference, at which he described an unusual experience which he had had during that flight. He said that he had been looking out the window where he was seated near the rear of the plane when he noticed two large, coppery-looking disks darting in and out of the clouds. They were near enough that he could discern certain details which indicate that he was seeing the double-convex type UFO which was just beginning to replace the earlier type disk or so-called flying saucer. Dr. Wilkins described what he had seen to the reporters in Atlanta, and when asked if he had any idea what the objects were, he replied, and I quote him, "I certainly do. I saw two flying saucers," end quote. Frank Halstead, who was for 25 years the curator of the University of Minnesota Observatory at Duluth, says that he has seen a total of three UFOs, two of them in one day and almost at the same time. No professional astronomer ever saw a flying saucer. The record indicates otherwise.
Thank you so much for listening. This has been Tino Gonzalez for 90.7 FM WGXC. You just listened to Frank Edwards' vinyl LP recording of Flying Saucers, Serious Business. This was made possible through the incredible work of the late Wendy Connors as part of her Faded Discs UFO archive. Thank you for listening.